Welcome, everyone, to today's conference call. At this time, your lines have been placed on listen-only for today's conference until the question-and-answer portion of our call, at which time you will be prompted to press star one on your touch-tone phone. Please ensure that your line is unmuted, and please record your name to ask your question. You will be allowed one question with one follow-up during our Q&A portion. Today's conference is also being recorded, and if you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn the conference over to our host, Mr. Benjamin Haynes. Sir, you may proceed.
Thank you, Jill, and thank you all for joining us today for an update on the 2022 U.S. monkeypox investigation. We're joined by Dr. Jennifer McQuiston, Deputy Director for CDC's Division of High Consequence Pathogens and Pathology, Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis, Director of CDC's Division of HIV and AIDS Prevention, Dawn O'Connell, HHS's Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response, and Dr. Raj Punjabi, the White House's Senior Director for Global Health Security and Biodefense. All will provide opening remarks before taking your questions. Before we get into comments, I want to note that the contents of this briefing are embargoed until 1 p.m. Eastern Time. With that, I will now turn the call over to Dr. McQuiston.
Hi, and thanks for joining us today. As was mentioned, my name is Jennifer McQuiston. I am the Deputy Director of CDC's High Consequence Pathogens and Pathology, and I am the Incident Manager for CDC's Monkeypox Response. I'm going to talk today about new information that CDC is publishing in the MMWR with results from our ongoing investigation into the outbreak. Since this outbreak began, CDC is aware of more than 700 cases that have been reported globally. In the United States, 20 cases have been identified in 11 states as of today. There's one additional case in the United States that was infected and tested elsewhere. The strain of the monkeypox virus affecting patients in this outbreak is the West African clade, and that is less severe than other known clades, the Congo Basin clade, meaning that in historical outbreaks in Africa, it has led to fewer deaths. Right now, no deaths have been reported in this outbreak among either the U.S. cases or those in other countries. That being said, we don't want to minimize this condition. The rash caused by monkeypox virus can spread widely across the body or present in sensitive areas like the genitalia. It can be really painful, and some patients have reported needing prescription pain medicine to manage that pain. The sores can also cause long-term scarring on the skin. CDC is collaborating with local public health partners and the global public health community to learn more about how this outbreak began and how it's spreading in the United States and other countries. Today, CDC is publishing a Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, or MMWR, with some of the results from the early response. The MMWR includes details about the first two known cases and the timeline of the outbreak and the U.S. public health response. I'm going to give you the brief timeline as reported in the MMWR. On May 4th, two men in the United States presented with symptoms consistent with monkeypox. Both had returned from recent international travel. In Massachusetts, a man developed a rash with fluid-filled lesions and sought outpatient medical care four times. On May 12th, he was hospitalized for management of pain from that rash. Also on May 4th, in New York City, a man sought treatment for a lesion in the mouth and a painful rash that also developed into blister-like sores. On May 7th, the UK Health Security Agency announced confirmation of a case of monkeypox in a man who had returned to Britain from Nigeria. And then the agency announced more cases on May 14th and 16th unlinked to that man who had traveled from Nigeria. On May 17th, prompted by news coverage of the UK cases, healthcare providers notified Massachusetts Department of Health and CDC about their patient and requested testing of the patient samples. A state lab confirmed the presence of an orthopox virus that day, and the next day, CDC confirmed it to be monkeypox virus. Also on May 17th, CDC, in coordination with state and local jurisdictions, initiated an emergency response to the monkeypox cases in the United States. CDC has responded to previous monkeypox outbreaks and continually monitors for this disease. On May 19th, prompted by the Massachusetts case, a healthcare provider notified New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene about the possibility of monkeypox in the patient mentioned in New York City. He tested positive for orthopox virus as well. Within a few days, clinicians reported a handful of additional cases to their state health departments. All patients in the MMWR and others reported to us since are adults. Most of them reported international travel in the 21 days before their symptoms began, and most patients in the MMWR identified as men who have sex with men. In many cases, their rash started in the genital area. The main risk factor for getting monkeypox is close contact with someone who already has monkeypox and has monkeypox sores. Anyone can get monkeypox, and we are carefully monitoring for this and for monkeypox that may be spreading in any population, including those who are not identifying as men who have sex with men. Currently, the cases reported in the United States, though, are mostly among gay, bisexual, or other men who have sex with men. So in addition to the broad outreach efforts, we're also focusing efforts to raise awareness within the LGBTQ+ community. Our priority is to help everyone make informed decisions to protect their health and the health of their community, guided by science. Currently, all patients are in recovery or have already recovered, and those who still have a rash are being advised to stay home and stay away from other people until they're fully recovered. That means when all of the sores have scabbed over, the scabs fall off, and new healthy skin has emerged. We are working with our partners in state and local health departments to reach out to people who may have had contact with the U.S. patients while they had monkeypox symptoms, but before they isolated. According to the MMWR, of contacts identified by patients, more than 20 are high risk, more than 100 are intermediate risk, and more than 220 are low or uncertain risk contacts. And for more information about how CDC determines risk levels or recommends states do, you can find that on our website. As part of our response, CDC developed a public health and clinical recommendations guidance and released that testing guidance to laboratories. CDC has developed protocols for the use of vaccines and antivirals to treat and prevent monkeypox. These are just a few details about this response. You can find more in the MMWR and on CDC's monkeypox response webpages. So now I'm going to turn this over to Dawn O'Connell with ASPR for her comments.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon. I am Dawn O'Connell, Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So ASPR, the organization that I lead, leads the nation's medical and public health preparedness for response to and recovery from disasters and public health emergencies. And we do this, of course, in close partnership with CDC and others on the call. We are responsible for developing and providing the vaccines and therapeutics being used to respond to this outbreak today. We currently have two FDA-approved vaccines and one FDA-approved antiviral that we are providing to states for treatment and prevention of monkeypox. At ASPR, we've been preparing for moments like this since our office was established in 2006. Our Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, or BARDA, supports the advanced development, approval, and procurement of drugs, vaccines, and other products that are considered priorities for national health security. And since 2007, BARDA has provided scientific, technical, and financial support to develop a next-generation vaccine called Jynneos, which is approved by FDA to treat to prevent both smallpox and monkeypox. We have also supported the manufacture and procurement of ACAM2000, a second vaccine available, which is approved by the FDA for smallpox but can be used to treat monkeypox under a CDC-held Expanded Access Investigational New Drug Protocol. We have deployed both vaccines in this current outbreak. BARDA has also supported the development of two antiviral products, TPOXX, which we've been supporting since 2009, and TEMBEXA, which we've supported since 2011. These are both FDA-approved to treat smallpox, but like the ACAM2000 vaccine, can be administered for monkeypox under a CDC-held Expanded Access Investigational New Drug Protocol. TPOXX is currently being provided to states to treat those who have monkeypox. In preparing the nation to respond rapidly to a wide range of potential health emergencies, BARDA looks for potential countermeasures that can be used against multiple threats. We're seeing the advantage of this approach today. Our years of support to develop medical countermeasures to protect against smallpox has made products available immediately to respond to the current cases of monkeypox. Once products like these are developed, they are added to ASPR's Strategic National Stockpile, or the SNS as it's known, to ensure that we have sufficient supply to protect the country from any of these potential threats. The SNS has smallpox vaccines and treatments at the ready. While we do not disclose quantities of smallpox vaccines or treatments held in the SNS due to national security considerations, I do want to say that we have enough vaccine on hand to manage the current outbreak. We also have, and this includes, of course, the sufficient supply of Jynneos, which was that next generation vaccine, to meet the demand in preventing monkeypox under the current scenario. And we have enough, of course, courses of the antiviral TPOX to treat those who are infected. The SNS is part of the federal medical response infrastructure, as many of you know, and can supplement medical countermeasures needed by states, tribal nations, territories, and the largest metropolitan areas during public health emergencies. The SNS is currently responding with these medical countermeasures to multiple states. In fact, we're up to 8 states that have confirmed cases of monkeypox, 8 states that have requested these medical countermeasures. While we need to remain vigilant and seek to contain the spread of monkeypox, the good news is that we already have the vaccines and treatments needed to respond. And with that, I want to thank you so much, and I'll pass it to Dr. Panjabi.
Thank you, Don, and thank you, Dr. McQuiston, for the work you're doing alongside your colleagues at ASPR and CDC and across HHS. My name is Dr. Raj Panjabi. I'm a physician and epidemiologist, and I lead the White House Pandemic Preparedness Office. Our office coordinates the government's efforts to prevent and respond to infectious disease outbreaks, including monkeypox. I think you also just heard from both Dr. McQuiston and Don about the value of investing in preparedness, and we've been coordinating the President's efforts in investing on preparedness since day one when he restored this office and kept his promise to do so. I want to cover with you briefly our multi-pronged approach to fighting this outbreak. This is different than COVID, of course, and I want to give you a sense of just the approach we're using. First, we want to test infected individuals to find out who is ill. We want to isolate and care for anyone suffering from this disease. Third, we want to ensure that we understand who's at risk of developing monkeypox through contact tracing efforts. And lastly, we want to offer vaccines to people who've had high-risk contact with infected individuals to help prevent more onward transmission of the virus. So how do we assess if we're on the right track in this outbreak? Of course, there are several indicators. There are 3 primary indicators amongst others, what I like to refer to as the 3 T's: testing, tracing, and timely vaccines and treatments. And let me tell you where we stand on each. First, on testing. To date, over 120 PCR orthopox tests have been performed across the country. Of course, this is just a fraction of what's available. 67 labs in the laboratory response network across 46 states actually have the collective ability to do over 1,000 tests per day. So what we're working on now is to ensure that that testing capacity is used, and we are asking individuals with symptoms, as Dr. McQuiston described, to go to their healthcare providers, and we're asking healthcare providers across the country to send more tests in if there's any clinical suspicion for monkeypox. So we should expect, if this is working, to see more cases and more tests in the coming days. The second T is tracing. As you heard, all state and local health departments involved have been asked to carry out contact tracing. You heard the numbers from Dr. McQuiston already, and that is an effort to monitor for symptoms, amongst those individuals who had some contact with someone with monkeypox. With this approach to contact tracing, health departments are able to offer prompt medical care if someone develops monkeypox, and also helps ensure there's not onward spread of the disease. The third T is timely access to vaccines and treatments. You heard from Don about the work that ASPR is doing. We want to ensure that people with high-risk exposures have rapid access to vaccines, and if they become sick, can receive appropriate treatment. To date, we've delivered around 1,200 vaccines through the work Dawn and her team have done, and 100 treatment courses to 8 jurisdictions, and we have more to offer states, as you also heard from Dawn. Thankfully, until now, we have had no monkeypox-related deaths. So that's on the home front. As you know and heard from Dr. McQuiston at the top, infectious disease know no borders. That's why the U.S. also embraces the goals of responding effectively to the outbreak, not only here at home, but also by partnering with other affected countries to respond locally. This means both endemic and non-endemic countries. And that's why for years the United States has been working with endemic countries, where monkeypox is endemic, I should say, in West and Central Africa to respond to monkeypox outbreaks as part of our overall efforts to reduce the burden of communicable disease and strengthen public health systems. Through the U.S. Global Health Security Programs, in fact, we have partnered with governments like Nigeria and the Democratic Republic of Congo to support responses to monkeypox and are conducting research through the NIH and CDC so we can learn more about the disease and how to stop it, of course, with local researchers in those areas. Let me just say personally, I've seen the impact firsthand having worked in West Africa on monkeypox responses. In fact, we were able to send in 2016 and in 2018 samples from patients in a forest area of Liberia to the CDC lab in Atlanta to get them tested for monkeypox, and that's what allowed Liberia to know there were cases at that time. We, of course, need to do more on the global front, and we will. And I want to just end by saying the administration's approach, we aspire for the following: to be empathy-based, to be equity-based, to be science-based, and to be transparency-based. And that's the approach we're committed to throughout this response. Now, with that, let me say thank you and turn back to Ben.
Thank you, Dr. Punjabi. Joe, we are ready to open up for questions.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Once again, it is star 1. Please record your name when prompted, and please limit yourself to one question with one follow-up. Our first question is from Julie Steenhuisen with Reuters. Your line is open, ma'am.
Yes, hi. Thanks. What can you tell us about the genetic sequences that you have already done on these cases? I was reading a report today by Stat News saying that there is some evidence that there's more than one clade involved. What does this indicate about the spread of this, and is this monkeypox outbreak, based on your findings, something that can be contained? Thank you.
Hi, thanks for that question. Yes, as the monkeypox outbreak has continued, our laboratory scientists have definitely been working to better understand how cases in the United States might be linked to Europe or other places. And a new analysis by our lab experts that resulted in sequence being uploaded publicly today shows that in the United States, among our cases, we have seen at least two genetically distinct variants of monkeypox virus that are circulating. Both of those share common ancestors to strains that have been present in Nigeria since at least 2017. So in lay terms, the scientists use a technique called sequencing to better find a unique genetic fingerprint of the virus within individual patients. And that genetic fingerprint can also begin to help us understand how viruses move through populations and change over time. So by using the sequence data, we can figure out which ones group together. So right now, most of the sequenced, we haven't sequenced virus from all of the patients yet. We're doing that regularly when we do get samples into CDC. But among those that we have been able to sequence, the variant that is found in the majority of U.S. cases linked to the variant that has been reported out of Europe and has been made publicly available by a lot of countries there. Those cases actually are similar to one of the U.S. imported cases that came in through a traveler from Nigeria last year that came into Maryland in 2021. So we know it's been circulating since that time at least. The other two monkeypox cases that we uploaded publicly today, they're similar to the 2021 imported case to Texas last year that came in a traveler. And while they're similar to each other, their genetic analysis shows that they're not linked to each other. And in contrast, the ones mapping to Europe are very tightly linked to each other. One of the two cases that we uploaded today, one is in a woman who had traveled to West Africa, and the other is in a man who had traveled to the Middle East and Africa. It's not clear what all this means, but it's likely that within the last couple of years, there have been at least two different instances where monkeypox virus spilled over to people in Nigeria from the animal that maintains it, and that virus likely begin to spread through person-to-person, close contact, possibly intimate or sexual contact. So that's a long explanation, but I know a lot of people probably had that question, so I wanted to cover it completely.
Can you answer the question about what this suggests in terms of whether or not this outbreak can be contained?
I know that there are scientists that are beginning to talk about whether monkeypox could possibly become endemic, whether we can contain it. I think we're working very hard to contain it, and in the United States, our containment strategy is focused on identifying cases, identifying their contacts, and making sure they get vaccine offered to them, and that they're all and that cases are being isolated to prevent onward spread. I think it's too early to know whether monkeypox could become endemic, but I think it's important to keep in mind that monkeypox has been endemic in several countries for decades. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Apoorva Mandavali with the New York Times. Your line is open.
I was wondering if you could say how many of the cases identified so far have been in men who have sex with men. You mentioned that most of them are, but can you sort of give a deeper breakdown of the gender and age of these patients that you've identified that are not just in the MMWR also?
Yes, so this information will be reported in the MMWR that will be coming out at 1 o'clock. So of cases that we have this information for, 16 of 17 self-identify as men who have sex with men. One case is a woman who reports normal heterosexual intimate contact.
Right, but you earlier in the call you mentioned that there are 20 or 21 cases in the U.S. altogether, right? So what about the other four?
So the other cases are newly reported, and we're still working on interviewing them and collecting that information.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, please.
And our next question comes from Alexander Tin with CBS. Your line is open, sir.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. This might be for Asper or for Dr. Punjabi. Can you tell us why was ACAM 2000 deployed if there is enough supply of JYNNEOS? And can you clarify how many doses have been offered versus distributed and administered? Thanks so much.
Raj, I'll be happy to start if you want to
please
come behind. So this is Donna Connell. Thank you for the question. The state, we deployed the ACAM 2000. So it's interesting. JYNNEOS is used both for pre-exposure prophylaxis and post-exposure prophylaxis, and it is the one that FDA has approved for both smallpox and monkeypox. But one state requested ACAM 2000, which is used for post-exposure prophylaxis. So that state, in consultation with CDC and their medical experts, must have made some determination that that was the preferred indication, and they wanted to use it for that. Beyond that, I don't have any information. I just am tracking what we have shared with states, and there was one state that did make that request. And then as far as numbers, could you ask that one more time? I apologize. I want to make sure I know exactly what your question was.
Sure. Yeah, you had mentioned earlier that you couldn't disclose, like, specific figures from the stockpile, but I was curious if you could clarify. I think Dr. Punjabi had mentioned a figure on the number of doses distributed. I'm looking to clarify how much has been offered versus administered. Thanks so much.
Okay, so that's, I don't know, CDC, who is working with the state public health departments, know, you know, because we do have the number, of course, out of the strategic national stockpile, the ones that we've deployed, but I don't know that we know how many have been used, but CDC has been working closely with the state. CDC, I don't know if you guys have that granularity. If not, we can try to find it and get back to you.
Yeah, we can get back on that.
Okay.
Raj, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, just that, you know, I've been in touch with some of the frontline doctors, and I think the way, you know, what we're tracking here is delivery to the local jurisdiction, and I mentioned the number earlier of over around 1,200 vaccines and 100 treatment courses delivered to 8 jurisdictions. Once it gets there between state, local, and then the healthcare provider, him or herself, there's further action, including offering to those who are per the guidance that CDC's been given, and whatever state adaptation there is of that to high-risk individuals. People are being offered the vaccine, including, you know, the healthcare providers that had been exposed to the first patient in Boston. I was just in touch with the doctors there today, and just that's just to give you a sense of how it's happening. You may also want to think about reaching out to some of the local actors on this and seeing if you can get more information.
Great. Next question.
Our next question from Bennett Nearpill with the Washington Post. Your line is open.
Hi. What do we know about community spread within the United States? We have multiple cases reported in New York City and Broward, for example. Is there any evidence that that there's human-to-human spread, particularly among men who have sex with men?
So I can take the first part of this, and then I'm going to turn it over to Dimitri to talk about sort of the focus in the MSM community and what we're tracking there. So right now in the United States, the overwhelming majority of our cases are reporting international travel, and they're reporting that travel in a time frame in which it suggests that their exposures happened there. There have also been some cases in the United States that we know are linked to known cases, and then we also have at least one case in the United States that does not have a travel link or know how they acquired their infection. Dimitri, do you want to add anything to that?
Thanks, Jenny. No, I'll just add that, again, and part of the work that we're doing is making sure that their general messages that are going out to everyone for awareness of how monkeypox transmits, but also making sure that we get the messages to the social network where, as you can hear from the upcoming MMWR, we're actually seeing the infections initially emerging. So I think it's something that we're tracking really closely from the epi perspective, but even more preemptively from the messaging perspective. Thank you.
And a follow-up on this, we're hearing that some of the rashes and lesions look pretty subtle compared to the usual photos that you see out of Africa where it looks something closer to smallpox, and that the photos of the cases we are seeing so far, it can be hard to tell that it's something along the lines of a monkeypox. So what should people be looking out for? Because the language that you generally use can be hard for the layperson to understand when we're talking about vestibules and things like that.
Thanks for that question. It's a great question. And monkeypox does have a really characteristic rash. We usually describe it as deep-seated, you know, well-rounded lesions, and that they progress as they age. They start out with what we call macules, which are just sort of rounded areas, and they turn into papules, which become like a higher raised area, almost like a pencil eraser. And then you can also progress to vesicles, which is more fluid-filled. I know that can be very confusing. I do know that our STI clinicians in the country are used to seeing rashes that are associated with other infectious diseases like herpes or syphilis and things like that. And I do think that especially in early presentation, it can be confusing to know what this might be. For that reason, CDC does have updated case definitions that we've posted on our website. And that case definition really says that a suspect case really should be anyone with a new characteristic rash or who meets epidemiologic criteria and you have a high clinical suspicion. And the epi criteria might be the travel or the association with the MSM community or knowing contact with somebody who had monkeypox. The important thing that we want to emphasize is that if a clinician has a concern about a rash that they're seeing, they can test for monkeypox. And I also want to emphasize that even if they think what they're looking at might be explained by something else, like a more common sexually transmitted infection, there are monkeypox cases, particularly out of Europe, that we're hearing about that have co-infections with other sexually transmitted infections. So they should test for monkeypox even if they think they might have a positive test for another more common STI. Next question, please.
Our next question is from Michaeline Duclef with NPR. Your line is open.
Hi, yes, thank you for taking my question. So the MMRW says there's 14 of the 17 cases have international travel. Can you tell us about those three other cases? And are those, and then you said one case in the U.S. has no travel history, no contact with anyone else. Where is that case happening, and where do you think the person got it?
So the other cases that are, they do not have travel, as I mentioned, some might have contact with a known case. So we're identified through contact tracing. There's one individual in the United States that isn't sure how they acquired their infection. I don't know that we are discussing exactly which state that is. I want to emphasize that this could be happening in other parts of the United States. There could be community-level transmission that is happening, and that's why we want to really increase our surveillance efforts. We want to really encourage physicians that if they see a rash and they're concerned it might be monkeypox, to go ahead and test for that. And that's one of the things that we want to emphasize.
So I've been hearing from the doctors up in Montreal that this rash can be really subtle, and it can be just like one small lesion that doesn't look anything like the rash that you were describing earlier. And I'm curious, like, how you're getting that information out to clinicians. I was talking to a doctor here in Texas last week, and they had no clue that, you know, one lesion on the penis could be suspicious of monkeypox. How are these doctors getting that information?
So we know that getting good, updated information out to clinicians, including pictures of rash lesions, is going to be really critical. So in addition to putting what we can up on our website, we're actively considering other ways to reach back out to the clinical community, including whether another health alert notice or a HAN would be helpful in getting this information out. Not only the revised case definitions, but the information about possible co-infections and the needing to cover testing for monkeypox, even if they think there might be something else at play. So I think we're definitely leaning into how we more effectively communicate that, and I encourage you to kind of look for new information coming out in the next few days. Next question,
please.
Thank you.
My next question is from Spencer Kimball with CNBC. Your line is open, sir.
Hi. I know you said you're not disclosing how many doses are in the national stockpile, but numbers were disclosed last week on a previous CDC call, and those numbers have been publicly reported. So can you confirm? I believe we were told last week that there are 1,000 doses of Jynneos available. Bavarian Nordic is saying there's a million in the national stockpile. So can you confirm whether the 1,000 is accurate or not? And then beyond that, under what circumstances would ACAM 2000 be preferred of Jynneos, since ACAM has, a higher risk of adverse events? Thanks.
Thanks. I'm going to ask Don to take it, but I'm going to step in first because I'm the one who provided those numbers last week, and I can tell you that the availability of vaccine in the national stockpile has shifted since we talked about it last week. So I would not look at those numbers as accurate at the current time. Don, do you want to add on?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So we continue to have more than enough vaccine available. We do have them pre-positioned in several sites around the country in the SNS. We also, as you mentioned, Bavarian Nordic is our, is a manufacturer that we're working with. And we continue to have doses with Bavarian Nordic that we are requesting. They can hold it at a negative 50 degrees, which provides an additional 2 years of shelf life. The SNS holds it at a negative 20 degrees. Which shortens the shelf life by those 2 years. So we're working closely with Bavarian Nordic to make sure that we're pre-positioning the vaccines that we think we currently need in the SNS, but realizing that whenever we pull it out of the Bavarian Nordic storage, we're reducing the shelf life by those 2 years. But we continue to have, so just to reemphasize, the numbers are changing. A, we're deploying them to various states, and B, we're moving them from the Bavarian Nordic storage facility, which has the negative 50, to the SNS, which has the negative 20. So there is a bit of a shift, but to say that we have more than enough vaccine available for the current outbreak is what we will continue to say. And I'd be more than happy to get you the particular doses that we currently have. I can go back and confirm that between the two storage sites.
Jill, we have time for three more questions.
All right,
and then, sorry, ACAM 2000, under what circumstances would it be recommended over Jynneos because of adverse events?
I mean, I think that's definitely a decision that's made in consultation with the clinician and the patient that they're seeing. I can tell you that ACAM 2000 is a single-dose vaccine, and Jynneos is a two-dose vaccine, so some of those decisions might be based on some of those differences, but we don't have information at the patient level. Next question, please.
Next question is from Joseph Choi with The Hill. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I know you aren't talking about the stockpile specifics, but are there plans or have orders for more dosagenase in place with Bavarian Nordic? I know the company has confirmed that they've received many orders from various countries they haven't specified themselves. I was wondering if you could get information on that.
We currently have, in our relationship with Bavarian Nordic, significant number of vaccines that that we have currently available, that we have also in bulk drug substance, which can be filled finish into vaccines. So between the vaccines currently available, the vaccine in the SNS, the ones that are sitting with Bavarian Nordic in that cooler temperature, and then the bulk drug substance we have, which can be filled and finished, we've got I'm not sure if I'm supposed to disclose, you know, I'm trying to be careful not to disclose the exact number, but again, to say we have more than enough for the current outbreak.
Can I also just add, this is Raj from the White House. We're also making further plans for additional access and supplies should we need it for other scenarios, right? So I think Don's exactly right. We're focused on the current scale of the outbreak, and we have concurred that we have sufficient vaccine. And if we have, we're not in the business of prediction, but we're in the business of planning. And I think that our function here is to continue also as an interagency and a government to plan for any future scenarios. So that is being taken into account in those conversations as well.
Great. Next question, please.
Our next question is from Jacqueline Howard with CNN. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking my question. My question is, based on the genetic sequence data and because there could be community-level transmission currently, do we have any reason to believe that there might have been monkeypox cases that went under the radar here in the U.S. before the Massachusetts case was first identified? And then does what we're learning change the public health risk level at all for the U.S.? I believe last we spoke, the risk to the public was still low. Thank you.
Thanks for that question. Yeah, the genetic sequence data is certainly interesting from a scientific perspective, and I think that scientists are going to continue to talk about what we think it might mean. I think to determine how long monkeypox virus has been circulating is going to require analysis of a lot more sequences from a lot more patients to begin to piece together that puzzle in a clearer way. I think it's certainly possible that there could have been monkeypox cases in the United States that went under the radar previously, but not to any great degree. I mean, we've had imported cases in travelers, two that were identified last year. It's possible there could have been other cases in travelers that were missed, but I don't think monkeypox has been circulating widely within the United States. I actually think the finding of these two cases with distinct lineages is actually a positive sign that our surveillance network that we're working to increase and make sure that people with a rash get tested is working. Next question, please.
Oh, and then is there any change in the public health risk level? Is it still low?
We still believe the public health risk level is low. And for those individuals that might be part of communities where it does look like the virus is circulating, we're working to really make sure that they're getting the messages they need to help stop onward spread. Okay, next question.
Our next question is from Karen Weintraub with USA Today. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much for doing this. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the cases in Nigeria and DRC. As I understand, there have been 1,200 cases in DRC this year so far and 58 or some deaths. And just wondering, did the U.S. get involved in that at all? Did we provide vaccination or antivirals? Could we have stopped this before it spread?
Thanks for that question. I mean, DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, is a country where monkeypox circulates regularly. We consider it endemic there, meaning that it's naturally found in wildlife reservoirs there and not infrequently reported in people. We're working really closely with the government in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and we have for many years. We actually are working on a clinical trial of JYNNEOS in the DRC, looking at whether it can protect healthcare workers from infection in patients that they might be exposed to. And we work with multiple countries in Africa where monkeypox circulates to help provide consultation, to help train and increase capacity so that those countries have the ability to diagnose cases. And then when they don't have the ability, offer consultation, sequence analysis help, all of those things. So I think we have been working in these countries for some time to try to help them manage the endemic cases that they have. And I think there was another part of the question that I might need you to repeat.
Just wondering, I guess, if this could have been stopped before it spread to Europe, if there were possibilities with vaccination and antivirals to stop it before it spread, since we know every virus or every pandemic is a pathogen is a plane ride away from every place else.
You know, it is, and I think that Nigeria reported a pretty big increase in monkeypox cases in 2017, and they had an outbreak at that time, and we worked with Nigeria during that time. We actually had a team that went out in the field to Nigeria. We worked with them. We had folks that were working with their ecologists there, trapping animals. I think that the issue is that at that time, it wasn't clear that this virus might be spreading in unusual ways. And I think certainly in hindsight, you know, could we have done things differently? I mean, I think we're all going to be asking those questions as scientists, but I think the important thing is to focus on what we can do right now. And what we can do right now is help identify cases both in the United States and around the world, make sure that those individuals are isolated and don't spread the virus onward, and making sure that any of their contacts get vaccine that's offered to them and that they're watching for symptoms so they can also isolate if they become the next monkeypox case.
Could I add just one thing, Dr. McQuiston, on this? This is Raj here, the White House. You know, the global health security agenda that was launched when President Obama and Vice President Biden were in office in 2014 and the period following the Ebola epidemic in West Africa was an effort to ramp up further investments in supporting countries like Nigeria and the Democratic Republic of Congo, which have been part of that, what we called countries where we provide intensive support. So Dr. McQuiston is absolutely right in terms of the deliberateness of the effort. And I think also correct, you know, as we look forward, one of our defined goals for the response is to ensure that we are tackling this outbreak here at home, but also further supporting endemic countries where monkeypox has been endemic, I should say, like Nigeria and the DRC. And I think you heard from Dr. McQuiston a couple of examples where that work is already ongoing.
Thank you. I'd like to thank all of our speakers for joining us today for this important update. If there are further questions, please contact CDC's main media line at 404-639-3286, or you can email media@cdc.gov. Thank you.
This does conclude today's conference call. We thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect and have a great rest of your day.